I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
One of my favorite people, I love his podcast. It's called Time Suck because he covers the weird, all kinds of weird. And this podcast will be no different. It's going to be no different. It's Children of God, Sex Cult, some talk about serial killers. We've also got Bud Dwyer, who offed himself. He was a state treasurer who swore he was innocent and was facing 55 years. And you know, obviously, you know, forever being besmirched.
Right.
And said he decided to read a long-winded note to all the press at a conference, pull out a .357 and pop his head. People swear he was wrongly convicted.
Yeah.
But in 2010, the former acting United States attorney who prosecuted him affirmed his guilt in 2010. And he was found guilty, for the record, by a jury.
So it was.
So at least he got a genuine trial. Now, I don't know the particulars of it, but I'll bet you anything this guy does.
Born May 17th in Idaho, a graduate of Gonzaga University with a degree in psychology, he worked as a family counselor before making the move to stand-up comedy. You've seen him on The Tonight Show, Conan, and Last Comic Standing. You've seen his comedy specials, Revenge is Near, Crazy with a capital F, and Don't Wake the Bear. His latest album, Maybe I'm the Problem, is available on iTunes and Amazon. And you can listen to new episodes of his podcast at timesuckpodcast.com. Please welcome longtime friend of the show, Dan Cummins.
Hey man, how are you?
How's it going?
Good, brother. How you been? Everything's good?
Everything's good.
You
yeah,
are.
Everything's good, man. Yeah, I just listened to you talk about Bud Dwyer. Yeah, man. After doing that one, after, you know, like looking into it, I truly think he was framed.
He got railroaded.
He was for the rules. You know, yeah, he was really, he did not get along well with the governor. Pennsylvania politics has actually been insanely corrupt for a long time. Like, when you start looking into it, there are so many, there was just more or less, like last year. More people got, you know, a year here, 2 years there. Basically what happened was the governor was taking his wife on trips and just kind of like, you know, living lavishly. And Bud was the treasurer, and he wouldn't sign off on her expenses. And then that kind of, you know, upset the governor. And then a little bit later, there was this just kind of like nonsense situation that, like, Bud got dragged into. And then, yes, he was found guilty. I mean, the jury did find him guilty, but I truly believe he was innocent. And then when he killed himself, it was actually, if he would have waited one more day, his wife and kids basically would have lost this huge state retirement and this kind of, like, pension package that let them, like, basically let his kids go to college and let his wife retire. So, like, if he wouldn't have died that day, the next day he would have been an inmate. He wouldn't have been a treasurer anymore. He was still the treasurer at that point. And so I truly believe he kind of sacrificed himself.
How crazy.
And, you know, and that filter shot, Hey Man, Nice, that filter song, excuse me, Hey Man, Nice Shot, is about Bud Dwyer's suicide.
See, now, and I know a lot of weird stuff. I knew about this, and I've seen the footage because there was five cameras in there. But I had no idea the backside of it. I guess like most people, you go, okay, 1987, well, there was no internet then, so you kind of had to live with whatever the news fed you.
Oh, yeah. I think I watched it on Faces of Death.
I still have multiple VHS tapes. You why?
Right.
So this is the stuff you've been covering. And Dan, here's what I love about you. Well, I love a lot of things. One of the things I love about you is the fact that you're a great comedian. You see the world in a very effed up way, but a very clear, honest way. And now you've taken that into this podcast, which isn't necessarily about comedy at all.
Right, exactly. It's been a wild ride, man. You know, talking about all these topics, and, you know, people have gotten really invested in the show. And, again, you talk about, like, having an honest take on the world. It's funny how, oh, man, you know, the world is so full of people having triggers now. Now it's like a weekly game of, like, who am I going to enrage this week?
That's so much fun. I love that. Because, yeah, you're just trying to have a discussion, a real discussion about something that's real and factual, and then you can have an opinion on it. But you're going to enrage a trigger because it doesn't feel good to you? Well, the world doesn't feel good, you silly pussy.
Exactly, man. I mean, yeah, you and I think, you know, very much alike. But it is funny. Like I just did the one that surprised me the most. I did not think it was going to be a landmine. Was Andrew Jackson, President Andrew Jackson.
Old Hickory was a mean old bastard is what he was.
You know, thought that was totally fine to do. And but it's like people lately I've noticed they can't take people out of context, like the times they lived in. They want to judge somebody who lived 200 years ago by today's standards. And so, like, in that one, people got, like, really mad about, like, yeah, why would you do that? This guy was a slave owner. I'm like, yeah, it was 1810. Like, what?
Everybody was a slave owner if you had any money. Sure, sure.
Right. Right. It would be weird if he was like, living in the 1970s and lived the exact same life. And they're like, oh, my God, this guy's a monster.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, man, you got to judge people by, like, the time they lived in. It's like I just heard Jake was telling me about that couple in Mexico that was doing all the body parts and, like, the murders and stuff. It reminded me of the live time stuff I'm doing right now in different places. It's about this Matamoros narco-Satanist cult. And this dude, in near Brownsville, Texas, he thought he was, like, a dark wizard. He was sacrificing people in this Palo Mayombe kind of weird, like, dark religion. It's like a dark offshoot of Santeria.
Right.
He thought that was appeasing this death god and these other gods to give his drug smugglers protection. So he would sacrifice somebody, he would make a potion, the people who would drink the potion, these drug smugglers, and then they would think they were invisible to authorities. And you look at him now, and like rightfully so, you're like, oh my God, this guy's a monster. But you put that guy 1,000 years ago, he's a respected Aztec priest.
Sure he is. He's a shaman.
Same thing.
Sure he is. Well,
the same life. Yeah.
You know, I mean, Andrew Jackson, like my hang up with him, and certainly he's going to be remembered how he's going to be remembered. But there's no refuting the Trail of Tears. Like, there's some monstrosities in his background. We go, Jesus Christ, man. Like, you know, but it doesn't trigger me. I just look at stuff like, I don't want to tear down statues of Andrew Jackson. I want a plaque put on the front that tells the truth. That's it.
Exactly.
Nothing more.
Yep. Yep, exactly. And even on that one, too, it's like, it was terrible, but he was a confusing dude. He also raised two American Indians in his home, like adopted them, you know? And so it's like, he didn't outright, you know, hate. He was just, you know, a product of his times in the worst of ways sometimes. And even on that thing, you know, the Trail of Tears, it wasn't like it was all his idea. And I'm not accusing him.
I mean, no. You're looking at it from an objective point of view, and that's what you have to. Listen, everybody's so busy being right, nobody can step back and just look at it and go, okay, what am I really watching right now? What am I really seeing?
Exactly. And so it makes me kind of double down on it because I think it's, like, so needed in the world right now. And that's what people who like the show like about it. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of reasons, like, people like what you do. Just like, man, just refreshing to hear somebody not sugarcoat everything and not pander all the time. Because it feels like that's, you know, more and more the media. Oh, and Jake told me that you were looking at flirty fishing.
That is
on the Children of God.
A whole new level of super creepy. Now that was part of what started out in California. Is that right? Then in 68.
Yeah, Huntington Beach.
Teens for Christ.
68. Yeah, exactly. Yep. And then this David Byrd guy, who was like third generation, kind of like snake charmer.
Uh-huh.
With like his mom was like one of those tent revivalists that would go around and get people worked up into a frenzy and. You know, kind of a very radical form of Christianity. And then Berg started getting a little group of people together in 68 in Huntington Beach and then turned into this thing called Children of God. But he just, you know, kind of typical cult leader, started off with like, hey, we're here to worship Jesus. And then a couple years later, hey, heads up, I talk for Jesus now.
Yeah.
So just, you know, exactly. Just deal with that.
Always.
From there, it's like, hey, there's a new one. Jesus wants us, some of the upper members, to have orgies, to strengthen our bonds. Jesus just told me it's time for wife swapping.
Yep.
I'm going to be doing some wife swapping now. That's what the Lord wants.
I'm the one doing it, though. Yeah. I'm the big guy. Like, I'm gonna bang all your wives because I'm in charge because I talk to God.
He's a weird, more open twist. Well, he just let everybody do it after a while. He made it so his twist on the whole thing was talking about God's love was that God's love was physical. That was the main expression of God's love, was like, he gave us these nerve endings and our genitals, and, you know, and And so when you withhold God's love, now you're sinning. And he made it this weird situation where women in the cult, if they're not giving it up to every
man
who wants it, well, then they're, you know,
sinner.
Keeping God's love to themselves.
Sinner. I love the fact he used the cartoon to get people to go along with it. So just like you'd see, like, remember you go to a heavy metal concert and you'd see like they'd hand you the pamphlet that was a little cartoon about how you ended up going to hell because you went to a heavy metal concert.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's like a half naked girl with her boobs out. The main thing we're trying to give them is God's love, not just sex. Guys going, wow. And she's like, I am God's love. And then the understory, the narrative is sometimes we use sex as a tool or proof that we love them, but it's not the main kind of love we're trying to give them. So you see, it's a very, very tricky subject.
Well, he was getting in trouble legally. People were looking for him because he was getting shadier and shadier. So he went into hiding, and yeah, he wrote these things called Moe's letters. So he started calling himself Moses. His name is David Berg, but now he's of course Moses because he's got special saint or whatever, or prophet, And yeah, they had graphic novels almost. They had this, you know, people like draw cartoons for them, and they would just send these out to the members like, hey, here's what we're doing now. And that's how that flirty fishing got started, which is like how they would recruit new members, send women out to essentially be hookers for Jesus. That's actually what they called it. and then
how many people were there? How many?
Thousands, but not like, it never got huge. I think at the peak, the Children of God was never more than like, as far as true members, never above 10,000. It was never like a huge group. But they didn't all live in one spot. They were kind of like a little mini compound here and there.
130 communities around the world, they said, in 77. By 83, they said there was more than, I'm looking this up, and I don't know if it's true or not. This is at timeline.com, but that reported more than 10,000 full-time members living in 1,642 homes and was renamed the Family in 77.
Right. Yeah, they've morphed, now they're, I think they're the Family International, or maybe they're still the Family now, but it's always been kind of hard to nail down with them because they had for a while, a different level of membership where you just paid a small due, but, you know, maybe you didn't get in on the orgies or something, but it's like, he was always kind of on the run and in hiding, because he got real creepy at the end. He went from flirty fishing, and funny note that when people started getting like herpes and stuff from, you know, mm-hmm. being prostitutes for God, he wrote another Moe letter called Afflictions that basically was, hey, congratulations. You got herpes. Jesus had herpes too. And it's a sign that you're spreading God's love appropriately. Like, where it is a badge of honor. It's a badge of honor.
Well, God's chosen flirty people. Fishing is simply what all swingers do, like T-swings. And you have to have a hot wife or a hot girlfriend, and she goes she goes to the other chick and talks her into coming back and do. Because if you lead with a guy, it's creepy and it never works, right? You have to send the women out to drag the others in.
Yep. Yep, yeah, he knew how to market. I mean, if it wasn't for the flirty fishing, they would have died a long time ago. But then he got super creepy and went into hiding because then he started advocating for pedophilia and incest. He would actually say, like, why can't your mother and father show you how God's love works?
Oof.
They're the ones who love you the most. Why can't they share their love? Like, he just kept getting creepier and creepier and creepier. And that's when, more of the members, too, were like, hey, we were cool with the orgies, but this is getting a little much for us. This is getting a little creepy. But,
so you know, what like, finally happened to him?
Stars were raised in that. Sadly, he died of natural causes, they think, in exile.
Too bad that it didn't kill. Joaquin Phoenix and Rose McGowan, they say, were part of it.
Yep. Joaquin, the Phoenix family, actually, their name, their last name, Phoenix, I can't remember off the top of my head their maiden name before that, but they chose that name, like a phoenix, you know, what, you know, rises out of the ashes, after they got out of the Children of God cult. So that their name actually is tied to it that way. When the dad took the family out, then they changed their last name to kind of start a new life. But
rule number one.
Phoenix, before he died, he would claim he was molested, you know, as young as, I think, 4 years old in the cult. And then, yeah, Rose McGowan, her dad, was a leader of one of the Italian little mini compounds before they got out.
Here's the classic rule.
The original,
Dan. Rule number one, never trust a preacher with a boner.
Exactly.
This is
It's exactly.
Universal.
When I read this stuff, I just think, like, it's crazy how many weird things have happened in the world because essentially one dude wanted to nut a certain way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right? This is always the problem.
Right. Yeah, that's what I needed. I needed
a
small group around me worshiping me to get rock hard. And in order to finish, you know, I gotta have three ladies, and they all gotta be married to people looking at me with sad eyes in the corner of the room.
Well, that's it. But yeah, he's like, I don't have enough money for a really great boat or a house, so I gotta do this. You know, God said
exactly.
To do it. Yeah, it's all because you're horny, man. It all comes back to the same thing, man. It's always this. That's what always makes me laugh. I'm like, look, sex is not sacred, you goofy bastards. Stop letting it be used for that. It's simply your DNA telling you to replicate yourselves because that's how all living things keep going.
Right, right. Yep, and they just got twisted, man. And then the killers were doing, you know Alexander Pashushkin, the chessboard killer?
Now, Jake was telling about this. So he was a screwed-up kid that they had no impulse control because he got hit in the head when he fell off a swing, and then his parents or grandparents thought they could get him settled by teaching him the fairly intricate game of chess, and that would teach him impulse control, correct?
Yeah, they don't have the exact dates, you know, as far as when these events happened in his childhood, as far as age, but yes, he got a bad head injury when he was, knocked him out, you know, it was like severe concussion. And that's a weird thing where, like, he fell off the back of the swing set in his park across the street from where he lived, and then the swing, I guess, hit him in the forehead, again, really hard, so he got kind of hit, like, back of the head, front of the head, back to back, really fast. And there's actually, I mean, a lot of serial killers do have a history of head wounds. They've done studies, you know, that show that it absolutely can, like, get rid of impulse control and basically, like, the, you know,
CTE.
Kind of change your morality.
Sure.
You know, and that, they think that happened to him. And he was weird where there was no sexual nature to his kills, you know, because usually there is some kind of thing that way. You know, you look at somebody, or even like he had a weird idol, Andrei Chikatilo, the butcher of Rostov, who was the Russian serial killer convicted of killing the most people before him. It was like convicted of killing, like, I believe, 53 or 57 people. But then this Pashushkin guy was weird where he was just so methodical. It was like a video game to him. He learned strategy through chess. That's where it got messed up. So they wanted to teach him impulse control. But what he learned was, I'm pretty good at strategy. And he came up with a very efficient way of killing people, where he would just walk them to this one certain part of the park. You know, there was this big park across the street from these projects. He grew up in Moscow, and actually where he lived his whole life. He would do the same thing over and over for most of them. He would say, like, hey, my dog died. I'm going to go pay some respect. And this is like a sad part of Russia where everyone is, like, stereotypically, like, drinking vodka and just down on the world. And he would just take them to this little area where there was a well. And when they would look down the well, he would get them to look down the well, and then he'd just crack them over the back of the head with, use like, a vodka bottle or a stick or whatever he brought. And they would just fall into this kind of sewage drain system and just disappear. And he did that, they think, 60 times, because when they found him, he had a chessboard, and he had 60 of the squares blacked out.
Jeez. And as a guy who's been to Moscow, it's a frightening place anyway.
I've never been there.
It's man, I'll tell you what, we should jump on a plane and go anytime you feel like you can get some time off. It's so dark and weird. I spent New Year's Eve there at Red Square, and it is a weird Pink Floyd movie freak out like you've never seen.
Wow. You know, and for sure, I mean, when he was a kid, it was still like the last kind of little traces of communism stuff. So he grew up in these, like, government, you know, housing units that were notoriously just terrible. And it was just, you know, it's kind of like weird his life where basically when he went to prison, he just went from one cell to another. He went from the cell he'd be living in as a kid to the cell he'll spend the rest of his life in now in prison. But his living conditions actually in prison aren't that much different than when he was free. It was just such a bleak existence.
If you're just joining the show, Dan Cummins is with us at TimeSuckPodcast.com. Great comedian. Hey, are you worried that it's all going to get too dark? Because it does. There's more bad news and weird, dark stuff in the world than there is good. You know, you might want to spend a little time, you know, just researching hand fishing. You know, rednecks catching catfish with their hands and stuff, like noodling.
Yeah. Every once in a while, we'll do, like, a more uplifting one, you know, something just, you know, not as bad. Look at Nikola Tesla, you know, a while back, where that was just fascinating to learn, like, Just silly little trivia, like the whole AC/DC current thing, where I didn't realize, like, I'm like, why is there that little box at the end of every plugin for, like, a computer and stuff? Like for your MacBook or your iPhone, there's, like, that little square.
The dongle. Yes, the dongle.
But what is that thing? And it's like, oh, it's a converter from, like, the DC, you know, or the AC power that comes to the power line, converts it to DC. So you can be, but it's, like, all this, like, random little thing that's, you know, not murdery. But then,
Well, it is kind of, although the dark one about that, remember it was he and who was it? Was it, it was Edison.
Oh, Edison.
We're getting into it.
Animals?
Yeah, and they electrocuted the elephant down at Coney Island in front of a whole crowd of people.
Oh,
yeah.
He had people electrocute so many animals. So many dogs. He would buy stray dogs for a quarter and just light them up to show people, like, that AC power was bad. Like,
yeah.
I was thinking, like, can you imagine somebody doing that now, like the equivalent, like what they used to be able to get away with, like if the CEO of Coca-Cola came out and just gave, like, on a commercial, just had, like, a dog drink, you know, cyanide-laced Pepsi, to be like, yeah, you like drinking Pepsi? Look what happens to Bobo here. Bobo drinks Pepsi.
Yeah.
Watch him painfully die here. You
yeah.
Like that?
They took Topsy, the elephant, at Coney Island and ran 66 gazillion volts. And at 600, like, some ungodly amount. And he just literally, there's a video of it, an old-time film. And, like, his trunk goes straight up, and he smokes, and he just poof, falls over, and you're like, Jesus Christ, you're like, people are terrible.
Terrible.
So the feel-good part is Nikola Tesla, even though he was trying to perfect the death ray, wasn't Thomas Edison.
Right. That was weird about his end of his life, too, is, you know, he was, that whole thing of genius and insanity, you know, Tesla was a genius, and he was, like, all he cared about was his scientific experiment. He would sleep, like, 4 hours a day.
Yep.
Never had a romantic relationship, just cranking out. But then he got, you know, kind of fell into poverty. Some bad things happened where his AC power was never really taken. You know, this Edison kind of whooped him.
Yep.
In this war of currents, they called it. And at the end of his life, he was kind of poor and he got kind of crazy. And he would have these annual birthday gatherings where people would come, you know, say hi and pay their respects and catch up. And he got in his habit of making these outlandish claims throughout the end of his life. And, like, one of them was what you said, like, the death rate. Like, he started claiming, he became, like, this weird supervillain at the end of his life. Like, I have a death ray. I have a cosmic ray gun in my basement that you'd like to see. Sure, we'll see. I can't. It's not ready to be shown yet. Like, it was just craziness at the end.
Oh, yeah. No, he was already there. He was telling people he received radio transmissions from Mars with his technology. He was figuring out how to talk to other planets. He had visions. He's just crazy, man. It was just that fine, weird, you're right, balance between absolute insanity but having enough IQ that you didn't have to stop yourself with logic. And then one day it goes 51 crazy, 49 sane, and then that's the end of it all.
Yep, he ran the engine too hot for too long. He didn't stop for oil checkups.
No. TimeSuckPodcast.com.
He overheated.
Dude, this is why I love you, man. I literally, we could do this all day. We don't even need these audience people. Let's just go to we'll go to Disgrace Land. We'll sit in the woods.
We go to Disgrace Land and talk about weird stuff.
That's right.
And shoot flamethrowers.
That's right.
And get drunk and enjoy life.
I'm waiting on a bowling ball cannon currently.
Are you serious? You got one? What do you mean waiting? Are you having it built?
Jake talked one of the guests out who sells these bowling ball cannons into sending one. And it'll shoot a bowling ball a mile and a half. So you got to really watch your trajectory.
A mile and a half? Oh, man. There's nothing bad that can happen with that.
Nothing wrong could happen with that. Nothing at all. Nothing at all, man.
Don't drink enough that you think you can be the guy who used to fire bowling balls into his stomach and just, like, flex that old.
The old timey, yeah. No, listen. You got to come out. You got to get it. We got to get you booked at the Improv and just get you back to Kansas City as soon as possible.
I'm going to be there next year. I don't have the date to announce right now, but, like, next time we talk, I'll have it. We're putting a run together that I'll be at, like, it'll be like Friday, Saturday in Kansas City. But yes, I will be there next year.
I will send you also pictures of. I'm jumping around here, but I realized it's almost Halloween. Currently, the guys at DSS, Joel and Austin and Church and everybody, and we're all working on a 225-foot steel robots for my front yard for Halloween.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Fire, smoke, lasers, laser vortex, like full LED screen, high definition heads. Like it just, it like old, somewhere between new and old, like old vintage Japanese robots.
Right, right. Oh, that is amazing.
Where do you see this? It's so stupid. You're going to love this. You should come. You should just show up. You should just fly in on Halloween.
Oh my God. I wish I could. That is odd. You should be way more exciting than, I mean, we'll be, I think this is the last year we're taking the kids trick or treating. Like, you know, I think my son's the last year we can probably talk him into doing that. He's turned 13. It's almost over. We're gonna do that. I'm gonna dress up as a creepy character that actually came up in the Candyman killer suck. There was this monster in Houston that killed a lot of boys. He recruited two teen boys to help him kill other boys. Terrible, terrible, terrible.
And that's what you're going as? Human.
No, but I'm going as when they were looking for some of the kids they came across, there was a Houston pimp called Chicken Joe. Chicken Joe. And that launched a character in the show called Chicken Joe, where I'm always just like, ba ba playboy, ba ba. And I talk all this like weird chicken pimp talk. And so we have a chicken head. I'm gonna dress one of the dogs up as a chicken. And I gotta get my pimp cane and like a flamboyant outfit. But people are just gonna like, they're gonna be so confused trying to figure out what type of character I am. It's like, is he a chicken? He looks a little 70s. He can't be a pimp. Why is the dog dressed as a chicken? It's going to get weird.
Yeah. No, it's just going to get super weird because people will be like, who is this? Because Chicken Joe, did he show up in some weird form as a pimp on Family Guy as well?
I don't think so. Not that I know of, but it sounds like exactly like one of those characters.
So great. By the way, I just Googled Chicken Joe Time Suck. That's a very nice logo you have there.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Last year I went as another confusing character. Sometimes just hard to explain, but Michael McDonald, the singer, has shown up and kind of become a character in the show. And I would just sing, but I called him Triple M, and he became like this kind of beefed up action figure version of Michael McDonald that had this machine gun. And so last year I was Michael McDonald, but with a machine gun. And that was another one, but I looked more like Colonel Sanders with a machine gun. And kids coming to the door just every time give me a look of like, what? What? Who? I don't get it. Nah, don't worry about it. It's going to be more confusing this year.
People love Time Suck. TimeSuckPodcast.com. Every time you're on, everybody talks about the Master Sucker. Hail Nimrod. Hail Lucifina. Hail Love You Bojangles.
Hail Nimrod,
another one, yeah.
Yep.
Another love Time Suck. I listen every Monday, said 4868. And it just goes on and on and on, man. People really love it here in Kansas City.
I can't wait to do, hopefully I can figure out how to do a live Time Suck when I'm there, too. Those are so fun to do. But yeah, man, I can't wait to get back there. It's been such a fun audience, like, such a fun group.
Man, let's find a good, weird place to do it and facilitate it, and it would be a hoot. Let's bring you in for a live podcast.
Oh, my God. They've been so much fun. Like, I've been doing more and more of them. And because then you get to add the slides. You know, you get to have, like a visual presentation with the live one, and it's a little more, more interactive with the crowd there, and so much fun.
All right. Listen, everybody, TimeSuckPodcast.com, the great Dan Cummins. And, Dan, I don't even have to say it. You know you're welcome here anytime. Pick up the phone. Come to Kansas City. Come spend some time at Disgraceland. Let's set some stuff on fire and shoot some bowling balls.
Oh, man, it's so much fun, man. Yeah, I love you, man. I love calling. You want to have me come and talk on the show. And best show in the U.S., man. Best radio show. It's awesome, man.
I appreciate you. I love you. I'll see you soon. Stay there. Hold on.